Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian here in the Morton studio today. Anxious to talk with farmers around the country. Got a lot of email questions that have come in too over the week. We're going to try to get through some of those as well today. Lots going on, and it's fun. I just love this time of year. We're planning for next year. We're hopefully going to be able to get back out in the field and get a little bit more done, but maybe not on our farm. I'm not sure about yours. We'd love to find that out as well. Brian, as you talk about the stuff we've still got to go on the farm, our odds are probably not good of getting another warm spell as far north as we are in the U.S., but it's possible. If we do get a warm-up, what would be your priority?
Well, it's not. We got frost a foot deep. What do you think we're going to do? Nothing. We can't do anything. It's winter.
I'm trying to be optimistic, Brian. I'm trying to be optimistic that, you know, we have one more spell of 10
all
days
right,
where
all
it's
right.
warm.
So here's the thing on the farm. There's a difference between being optimistic
and realistic.
Right. Right.
Kind of like corn getting to $7 here in the near future.
Right. So, you know, we have to be realistic about things, and now we have to go to plan B, and that's just the way it goes. So this is one of the things that you, as a farmer, you have to be thinking about all the time. You can't just have a plan A. You got to have a plan B, plan C, plan D. So that way, as soon as plan A is no longer an option, you go, oh, yeah, no problem. I'm not worried at all. Here's my plan B. Or if that doesn't work, okay, well, now here's my plan C. And the big thing for success in any business, and I'm not just talking about farming, I mean any business, the big thing for success is you just have to be prepared. And you can't panic. You can't let emotion stand in the way of getting the job done. So, yeah, we actually did get all the fall fertilizer we were trying to spread. It got done. So we're in good shape as far as that goes. But the problem was we were going to get a bunch of manure and compost on our ground. Well, there's 2,000 acres that didn't get done. So what does that mean going into spring? Well, number one, we're going to do a lot more liquid with the planter. Number two, we're going to spread some urea now in the spring that I wasn't planning to spread. And number three, we're going to probably do a little bit more side dress next summer, which is fine. I don't have any real big issue with any of those things. They're all proven things that'll work just fine. But that's what we're going to have to do since the fall work didn't get done. Now, what a lot of people are looking at here is they were hoping to, let's say, clean up some of the ruts and get tillage done, fall tillage. Well, that's the one that, let's be honest, if you're going to do that in the spring, it's probably going to delay planting. So my plan B on that is, okay, plan A is, let's say miracles happen, and in March we can go out and do a bunch of tillage when the ground's not wet, clear down to 6 or 12 inches deep. But realistically, we have to say, yeah, it's going to be May. It's going to be early May. So that's going to delay our planting. So if it's going to delay your planting, then you have to say, am I going to stick with full season hybrids or full season soybean varieties, or am I going to move a little bit earlier? For me, if I have to delay my planting, I'm moving to an earlier maturity. That's just the way it goes. So these are discussions that you have to have with your seed dealer that, okay, look, I'm ordering seed today. Here's my current plan, but just please understand, I'm switching to an earlier variety if I can't get that tillage done until when, let's be realistic, it's probably not going to happen because I've got ruts. Now, there's a difference between, you know, doing a little field cultivating or, let's say, running out there with a coulter cart or, I mean, something like that, a vertical tillage. There's a difference between that and cleaning up ruts. All right, cleaning up ruts, you got to go deep. And that's where the ground, it takes a long time to get dry that deep in the spring. That's why we try to get those things done in the fall. So if you weren't able to get them done, yeah, I feel for you. We don't have a lot of those spots, but we couldn't get them done either. So we might end up delaying planting in those spots.
Yep, that's just the way it goes. That's a plan B, and we'll see if we need to implement a plan C as well. Hey, Brian, want to take a mailbag question here before we jump into some calls?
Why are you asking me? Why
don't
you just say we're doing this?
Brian and Darren.
All All right, got one from Barry, and Barry's down in Texas. He said, you talk about placing your phosphate and potassium down in the soil about 8 to 12 inches because it doesn't move too well in the soil.
Right.
My question is, what would you do on Bermuda grass fields? I get putting down 3 years worth before planting, but some of these fields are staying in for 12 or 15 years or even longer. Will putting sulfur on at the same time and with irrigation help move phosphorus and potassium down? There's been a lot of talk about that, about putting nitrogen or putting sulfur, something that's leachable, and
phosphorus isn't going to move down.
The thought that it's going to bind with, the thought that it's going to bind with the P and K and pull it with it, I think is hopeful. I think it's kind of like me hoping that we're going to still get some tillage done this fall or winter.
Probably no, it's not going to move your phosphorus down. And you know, if your soil is light enough. And with irrigation, could that push your potassium down? Yeah, it could push your potassium down to some degree. But phosphorus, no way. It was interesting. Darren and I were just at this conference yesterday, and one of the things I got to hear a speaker talk about was phosphorus, and they were doing detections in water deep down in the ground. And they had to go to levels that normal scientists could not even detect just to find tiny amounts of phosphorus. In a 10-year period, grand total, there was like 4 pounds of phosphorus that had gotten down deep in the ground. I mean, grand total in 10 years. So it was... I mean, it's just literally nothing.
Yeah, again,
so
the strategy,
phosphorus isn't moving.
The strategy here, if you said, all right, 30 years from now, I want to be the best Bermuda grass producer anywhere, well, work on building those deep soil fertility levels so you have plenty.
Yeah, and you know, one way you could do that is deep injection. So you could go out with, even like for us, we're doing strip till, and some of the strip till we're doing is with these great big coulters, so we can get fertilizer still down to, say, 8 inches deep. Could you theoretically do that? And would I? It's not even necessary to do it maybe even every 30 inches. Maybe you do it every 60 inches and then keep moving it around every 2 or 3 years just so you get some phosphorus down there deep. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right, though. The fertility is going to be a big deal if you want to be successful as you go. We've got a number of questions and calls we're going to get to here as the show goes on. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. We just dug into the Ag PhD mailbag just before we get started. Brian, we had one here that I that I thought was interesting too. This one came from Aubrey, and Aubrey writes, "I really enjoy your shows. Very informative. I like the banter between you brothers. Keep up your good work, and I hope to make it up to your field day again. I'm coming from Mississippi. Also, really proud of the scholarship for young people for the Ag Conference that you're putting on. Way to go." Hey, thanks, Aubrey. Really appreciate that. We do have a collegiate agronomy workshop coming up, Brian. We get a lot of questions about that. You want to talk about that for just a minute?
Well, the collegiate agronomy workshop, it's the first time that we've done one of these, and it's going to be on Thursday, January 3rd at the Morton Center. That's right at the Ag PhD Field Day site near Baltic, South Dakota. So it's only about 10 minutes from the Sioux Falls Airport, for example, if you happen to fly in. Otherwise, driving, we're right near Interstate 90 and Interstate 29, so it's really pretty handy to get to. But anyway, with this collegiate agronomy workshop, yeah, we're going to talk about a lot of, I would say, more basic things in agriculture. But you know what? Even if you're not a college student, even if you are a young farmer, or for that matter, even an older farmer, it doesn't matter. We're going to go through things like how to read a soil test. We're going to talk about weed, insect, and disease control in corn and soybeans. We'll talk corn and soybean traits, seed traits and seed treatments, hybrid and variety selection, tiling basics, pesticide safety, food safety, water quality. And it's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on, again, Thursday, January 3rd. But anyway, we are going to give away 20 college scholarships that day. We do a lot of scholarships through some different organizations, and this one we're doing ourselves. So all you have to do is be a current college student. You got to pre-register, and at the end of the day, you're going to take a short test. Now, it'll be open book, but still, you're going to take a short test just to make sure you're paying attention. And once you you do that and have an adequate score, then you're basically in on the drawing for 20 different college scholarships. So the reason why we're doing this is a couple of things. Number one, we want to make sure that we are trying everything possible to provide great information for young people in agriculture. And then secondly, hopefully if you need that college scholarship, we're giving you the opportunity to continue on with college, because you know, learning is just so incredibly important in agriculture, and really in all professions. But in agriculture, look at how much has changed in the last 20 years. You've really got to stay up on things, and there's a lot of opportunity out there. It's an exciting time in agriculture. But when we think about the whole scholarship thing and just getting the opportunity to go to college, I think about our grandpa on our mom's side. Our grandpa had two breaks from college. The first time he went to college for a year, and then he ended up not going the next year because he didn't have the money. And a relative ended up giving him some money to go back to college. So that was awesome. And then the next time he couldn't go again. And what he did is he built a telescope and traded the university, the telescope, for tuition. So you think about how important it was for him and in his mind to get back to college. And, you know, we think about that sometimes. You know, we're really, quite frankly, pretty spoiled in the United States. A lot of people have enough money, or at least the opportunities, to get to college, but not everybody does. So we just want to make sure that we are providing some help out there.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Danny on with us right now down in Missouri. Danny, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Did you get harvest closed out on your farm yet, or are you still working on it?
Unfortunately, we still got a few beans left. We got about 2 days of bean harvesting left. November's not been a kind month to us. We've had 10 inches of snow and about 7/10 of rain. So it's been a slow going. November's not gone the way we wanted it to.
No, it's been a tough one for a lot of guys, no doubt about it. And it was amazing how the snow found a lot of these soybean fields that were still in. I mean, it could be rain, but anyway, it ended up being snow. So what do the beans look like? Are they still in good shape?
Yes, surprisingly, even though it's been a very wet snow, and the last one was a blizzard that we had 5 inches on, with over 30 mile an hour wind for over 3 hours, first blizzard in our area in the month of November. But surprisingly, the beans that were still standing are before the storm are still standing. Of course, the low-lying areas where the beans grew tall and fell down a little bit, those are the only ones that are down. So we're in really good shape.
Yeah, I just talked to a seed company production manager, and he said, you wouldn't believe it, but some of these beans now that have come out just in the last couple of weeks here have been among the best in the quality department. And I've also heard some aren't so good too, but hopefully the years are going to turn out well, Danny. My question for you about fertility. We were talking just a little bit before about fertility and movement down through the soil with all the moisture some areas have had. What kind of growing season did you have right where you were at?
We were dry. We caught a little rain earlier in the year, but then we were terribly dry. But we were on the southern edge of the extreme dry conditions. There was a lot worse conditions to our north, but we were dry. And then we caught a few rains there in August to help the soybean crop. And as for the corn crop, you know, it depended on, it was so variable that we went anywhere from 90 bushel to 200 bushel on our corn, just depending on where it rained at. So the beans wasn't as quite as great as we thought we would have liked, but it's a little bit slightly lower than our production history or APH, but that's, you know, every year's always got to be different.
Yeah, there's always challenges, no doubt. So with the dry year on the corn, does this impact next year's rotation at all, or was it not that bad a deal?
No, it does not impact next year's rotation. As when I was younger, an older farmer next door neighbor to us, he said his dad always told him, you don't ever really change up anything for the weather. You just keep doing what your rotation is. And I believe wholeheartedly 100% in that theory too.
Yeah, there's a lot of growers talking about switching things up for next year, you know, looking at market prices and in some cases where there was some negative weather this year just to try to avoid carryover issues or those kinds of things. But you're right. Keeping that rotation is pretty valuable when it comes to minimizing risk. And there's definitely plenty of risk in the game today.
Well, that, and I'll tell you, in farming, what farmers do, they're notorious at looking at last year, trying to decide what they should do next year by looking at last year, which is easy to fall into that trap, but you can't do that. Next year is different. You got to look forward. It's like the grain futures market that I was told many years ago. This is a prediction of what we think the future is going to be. So you've got to train yourself to look to the future. Don't look back at what happened this year, trying to make what's going to happen next year. I know that sounds a little bit odd, but a lot of people do that, and it's easy to fall into that trap.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Danny. It's very easy to fall in that trap. You know, one thing where it played out this year was just even making seed decisions. And I know for our firm, that's something that we had to work on before we were done with harvest, which normally we'd like to get through the harvest first before we make the call on some of those things. But we hate to miss out on the discounts, especially going into next year.
Absolutely. It seems like they always want to do it earlier and earlier every year. But we loved our dicamba beans. Somebody mentioned this is the third year. This is only the second year that was available to us. We're 100% dicamba. Love the cost savings. Love the way the weed control. And a lot of people, even the neighbors who were cautious about moving to dicamba, they have planted dicamba, which really makes it nice for us. And dicamba is, so, I mean, it was easy to make our seed decisions on that. Yeah. As for the corn varieties, you know, we're always fine-tuning that every year, so that's just your normal procedures we go through for the corn. So,
well, Danny, thank you so much. Really appreciate hearing from you. Good luck on the rest of harvest here. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
It's tough to keep your stored soybeans in perfect condition. To maintain beans at 13% moisture, you need to run your bin fans when outside air humidity is at 70%. For 12% moisture, you need to run at 65%. For 11, 60. How can you possibly get the timing right yourself if you don't know the humidity at your bin site and aren't there to switch on your fans? The Steps GMS Temperature Humidity Switch is your low-cost solution. For more information, visit us at stepsgms.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from HiPro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. HiPro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Head back to the phone lines. Here we got Dalton with us down in Southern Illinois. Dalton, how are you doing today?
Howdy. How are you? Pretty good.
Good. Good. How's harvest going down your way? You guys all wrapped up or close to it?
Yeah, got all wrapped up. Probably about 3 weeks ago. Still waiting on some tillage. Kind of got a little wet down here, so waiting to finish that up. Don't know if we'll get a chance, but hope so.
Yeah, did you get snow or did you get just rain out of this?
Yeah, we were right on the edge. We didn't get any snow. West of us, about 50 miles, got quite a bit, but we just got some rain out of it. So,
all right, so the tillage now, is this just tillage or is it incorporating fertilizer or manure?
No, I leave all my bean ground alone. I come in and I'll work the stalks down. That's just a practice my grandpa's always had me do, so that's just what I've always done. So,
yeah, the stocks are interesting, and a lot of our non-farm listeners ask about this too. Well, it's wet. Can you still cut those corn stalks up, or what do you do to make that happen? What do you do different on your farm, Dalton?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know a lot of people are against a disc, but my grandpa, he's 82 years old, and he's stuck in his ways, and that's how he's always taught me to do it. So as soon as it dries up a little bit to where I can get a disc out there, we'll work our stalks pretty deep and try to do a little bit of land leveling in some fields that have some ruts and go from there.
Yeah, the ruts are going to be the other part of the equation this year. I think some guys that maybe don't like to do very deep tillage are going to get stuck on that. Was it a bad deal in your area? Were you guys really wet through harvest?
Yeah, we got pretty wet there at the end and seemed like we had a lot of rain in the future forecast, so we didn't shut down and kind of roughed some of our fields up, but it was just we needed to get done and that's what we decided to do. So I do have some acres that a little bit more roots than I'd like to see, but have that from time to time, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not not every harvest, that's for sure, but every once in a while we get one of these. So how does it impact things for you going forward? Are you keeping with the same rotation for next year, or are you going to change things up a bit?
Well, I'd say that we're going to stick with our rotation unless something in the market just breaks to where it's not feasible, you know. I'd say that we're probably still going to go 50-50 beans and corn next year, and yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You mentioned the markets, and the markets are going to definitely be at play. There's no doubt about that. A lot of things going on with trade and surplus crop and actually really good demand on a lot of things like on meats and on corn right now. So hopefully that'll be able to pull some things through for us. So going into next year, Dalton, is there anything big on your farm that you're thinking, wow, I got to update the planter, I got to work on you know, building up fields, anything that you guys are trying to change?
Oh, I'd really like to find another guy that can run a planter so we can run another one. Seems like we had a lot of late planting beans this year, and I would have liked to get some earlier beans in the ground. Seemed like all of our early beans yielded a lot better, but we put out quite a bit of corn this year, so that took away from our early bean planting, so...
Yeah, it's interesting. The early bean planting, we've heard from a lot of guys this year that it paid pretty well. Now, there are a couple areas where the fall rains came at the wrong time for some of the early planted beans. But for the most part, the yields were really there. And I like your thinking. You know, if we could have another guy that could run that planter so we could get beans in the ground at the same time as corn, we may be able to dollar things out a little better on the farm. Well, good luck with that, Dalton. I know it's not easy to find people like that, but hopefully somebody in Southern Illinois that's listening here's an opportunity for me. We don't have enough acres, but we've got a planter, and I could go help Dalton out and make us both some money.
Yeah, send them my way.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Dalton. We really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Got John with us now. He's also in Illinois. John, how's it going today?
Hey, good afternoon. How are we doing today?
We're doing well. So what's the crop rotation on your farm? Are you doing some wheat in with the corn and beans?
I am. And honestly, I wish the way things were going, that nice little rally this summer, I had time to put the whole thing in wheat. But I do a corn, bean, and wheat rotation with some rye. You know, I actually really like some rye too that I use for cover cropping, so which is kind of fun. But my reason for my call is I'm right here, I'm in the center of the storm of snow. I'm still looking at a foot of snow, and in my county I'm right on the border of Wisconsin and Illinois, and about one third of the guys still have crops out yet, and there's beautiful beans out there, and they got a foot of snow on them, and it's pretty feeling for those guys right now. But my issue is we did get our wheat planted and it sprouted, but it didn't emerge. And I'm hearing conflicting stories from other people. Some people are saying, well, it's not going to make it. And then I've got some people who say, well, it sprouted, you should be okay. So I'm just curious on what do you think? Because if not, maybe I need to get some more corn seed ordered if it's not going to make it.
Well, John, here's the whole thing. We don't know, and nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've had the exact same thing happen to us before, and it's turned out fine. Mm-hmm. We've also had that exact same thing happen, and it hurt our stand. Now, I can't say it ever killed our stand, but there are other factors that I look at. So we do talk from time to time about winter wheat survivability, and I look at drainage, I look at fertility. Obviously, if we can get a cover, that's kind of nice. So, you know, there are a number of different factors here. We work with a lot of farmers that go through this literally every single year, and then they just make their evaluations in the spring and they go from there. If you know, there's nothing we can do about it today, so I just tell you I'm glad that you're thinking about it, and I'm glad you're trying to kind of plan, but quite frankly, you're going to have to do, we were talking earlier in the show, a plan A and a plan B, because, you know, plan A is hopefully it all turns out fine and everything's good to go. But your plan B is, you know, I might just talk to the seed dealer and say, look, I'm going to evaluate this in the spring, so I can't really order the corn seed or soybean seed or whatever yet because I don't know if it's going to pan out. So just kind of keep this in mind that I may end up needing some come spring. And with the way supplies are for corn and soybeans in the United States today, you're not going to have any issue at all finding corn or soybeans. It'll be no problem for you in the spring. It might not be the variety that you think you want, but you'll absolutely be able to find corn and beans for seed if the wheat doesn't pan out. But yeah, I wish there was some better indicator I could give you at this point, but I can't. We've had this happen before for us, for lots of people we work with. It'll probably be okay. We just have to hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good. At least you've had some experience
where
it has worked out.
Yeah, you bet.
And we definitely have the snow cover right now. So, I mean, so that's one positive about it.
Yep,
so
that's right.
If anybody wants some, they're more than welcome to come up and grab it. So that would be fine, too. Anyway, well, very good, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much, and I hope you guys have a great weekend.
Yep, thanks a lot. You too, John.
Yep.
Yeah, that is a good question, Darren. And you know, we run into this all the time with these fall-seeded crops in years like this year, where you wanted to get it done early, and we had the exact same thing happen on our farm. And I'm so mad at myself because I was telling our dad, you know, Dad, I think this is going to be the second earliest harvest ever. We started early, everything was ready to go, and then we got 10 inches of rain over a 3-week period. Well, there are some years we don't get 10 inches during the entire growing season, and we had it in a 3-week period in the fall when the crop's ready to go. So, we were all prepared, and granted, we don't do a lot of fall-seeded crop, but we do have a little bit of winter wheat, and we're going to do some winter barley and things like that on a few acres. It didn't pan out, didn't work out. And I think Glenn, our research lead, did get a little bit of fall seeded crop in, but it was probably a month later than I would like to seed it. So we're in the exact same position that John's in today, where, yeah, I would have liked to have planted it earlier. Now it's not at the stage I wanted when this winter weather hit. That's the way it goes. We're going to hope for the best. I think it'll turn out fine. We'll just see come spring.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum herbicide.com.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. Let's get right back to the phone lines here. We've got Isaac with us down in North Carolina. Isaac, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, guys. How about yourself?
We're doing well. Anytime I see North Carolina pop up, I think, oh boy. I wonder where Isaac's at in the state of North Carolina, and I wonder how the storms treated him this year. How did you hold up through the storms?
Yeah, so we're on the far eastern part of the state. We have two hurricanes, we're feeling like we fared a lot better than our neighbors to the south. It's never a good thing to have a hurricane and then 3 weeks later have another one. But overall, we feel like we came out pretty good.
So I saw a lot of videos and a lot of social media posts from farmers in North Carolina just hustling before those storms, trying to get out as much as they could. How did you guys turn out?
We were able to get our corn done, and then we helped a few guys get their corn finished up. And we were probably about a third of the way through our soybeans also when the storm came. So we were probably a little bit ahead of where the overall average was, but that certainly helped limit crop damage also.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to deal with outside of crop fields. Of course, we're always focused on the crop farming here, but how does it impact next year? I'm sure there's a lot of work to do out in some of these fields with the heavy amount of rain and so forth. Are you still planning on staying with your normal rotation going into next year, or is it all dependent on doing some dirt work and that kind of thing?
Yeah, a lot really depends on what happens the next month, because we've stayed wet after the storm, so we haven't been able to get our regular fall work schedule going either. So there's a lot of land smoothing and reshaping that needs to be done. There's a lot of storm debris that needs cleared up also. And obviously, if you don't get that out of the way until late March or early April, that's going to cut corn acres quite a bit, and I think it'll favor cotton and soybeans.
Now, you mentioned you get all the corn out. How are yields for your farm this year for the corn?
We were really disappointed this year. We had been wet in the winter and we were wet in the spring, and well, we never really dried up. It was kind of one of those years of spray when you can, not when you need to, and just always being late and never really being able to have the crop root like it needed to or get the sunlight it needed to. It was saturated from start to finish. And well, when we got going in August, September, was not a good finish.
Yeah, that's a challenge. I know for our part of the country, we had excessive moisture through much of the season, and we found out a lot of corn hybrids just don't like wet feet. And Brian was referencing earlier some work that Iowa State had done about looking at nitrate levels and where they were at, and they also looked at rooting depth, and they found a lot of our nutrients were just below where our roots were because the roots just didn't have enough oxygen down in the soil. I would assume you probably ended up with some of that same issue there, where the storm damage was probably worse than it would have been otherwise, just because we didn't have deep enough roots. Is that pretty close to true?
Yeah, I mean, certainly for us, yeah, we see yields go way down when we hit those anaerobic conditions and like the shallow rooting, like you said. Then when you get a strong wind event, standability becomes a big issue also. And then not just with crops, then also we saw a lot more tree damage and so on from winds that ordinarily wouldn't have done the damage that they did just because of the saturated ground.
Do you have livestock too on your farm, Isaac?
No, we don't. We're all row crops in our operation.
Yeah, I know the livestock guys had plenty of challenges as well. Well, we're sure all thinking about you guys down in North Carolina. Hopefully you get some good weather here the next month or two, and it allows you to get some of those things done. But thanks for taking time today to talk to us. Really appreciate it, Isaac.
No problem. You guys have a good one.
You bet. You as well. I got Steve with us right now out in California. Steve, what's happening on your farm?
Oh, good afternoon. Pretty much rained out today, but we're just trying to get some ground ready for vegetables again, planting the end of the month in December, and getting some garbanzo beans for rotational crops planted as soon as it dries out.
Yeah, everybody here thinks, well, when we've got snow and weather coming in, cold, boy, it sure be fun if we could farm you around, but it's a lot of work, Steve. You don't really get a break, do you?
No, it's 12 months out of the year. We've got something in the ground 12 months. Something's almost harvested every month, so it's pretty much year-round.
It's kind of nice to spread that workload out a little bit, but you mentioned garbanzo beans. Which crops are working for you this year? Are most crops making money still, or are there some that are having really good years?
Well, you know, the garbs are always pretty stable. I mean, we grow organic garbs for you know, the California. California grows a large garb, and so people that want canned garbs, they like that large size seed. So we can grow those pretty well, and it seems to be a pretty it's a good rotation crop, because it's not a break even. It's a little better than break even, so we are getting some money returned. The romaine market's going to be tough. I mean, as you guys heard before Thanksgiving, you know, we had a romaine scare, so that the vegetable market's been pretty tough since last year, and the watermelon market was terrible this year, so it's a year to try to regain our losses from last year.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's you know, you think about that, the romaine thing was something that when people all around the country know about it and are nervous about it, getting that public sentiment turned around is really important. What are some things that if you could talk to everybody out there that's your buyer for romaine and for other vegetables, what would you tell them about how their food's produced?
Well, you know, the guys back in the Midwest, you guys don't understand the food safety protocols that we have to go through. I mean, we test every water source monthly. We test every lot of fertilizer, if it's organic, every lot of fertilizer, compost, all has to be tested for pathogens, E. coli, salmonella, prior to coming to the farm. Listeria is another one. We pre-test all of our crops before we harvest them, within 1 week of harvest. So we have to take raw product testing. We get audited every year from a third party auditor, and USDA comes and audits us, could be as much as five times a year, to make sure that we're doing proper protocols for our food safety program. All of our leafy vegetable fields are completely fenced for any kind of rodent intrusion. We have mouse traps where we keep more for monitoring rodents. We check those every day. Our food safety protocol is better than it ever has been, and we still get these scares that come in. And you know, it's a difficult thing, and it really hurts the market. And we really don't, you know, want to hurt anybody in the industry or anybody over any of our consumers. But you know, it's a difficult task, and we try to do our best. And I'm not sure where this last one came from. They've narrowed it down to six counties in California along the Central Coast, but I heard that they haven't gotten it traced back to the exact location. But they have released lettuce is being harvested down in the desert. Yuma, Arizona, El Centro, and Florida, and Mexico has been released. So you should be seeing romaine back on the market here pretty quick, because they did start harvesting on Tuesday.
Well, that's good news. Yeah, we just need to understand, and you're right, farmers in the Midwest, we really don't know all the protocols that you're going through. We love driving through your area and seeing so many different crops in one spot, and especially crops that we love to eat. So that's certainly interesting to hear about a little bit. So you know, going forward here with, you talked about water quality, and this is something that a lot of farmers are asking us about. As you're testing that, are you looking for anything specifically with the water quality, or is it just a general test overall?
Well, it's not necessarily a water quality. It's a water pathogen test that we test for pathogens. We do water quality testing, you know, for our agricultural suitability testing. We do that about twice a year. Most of our water, if it's a decent year, we get enough storage, is runoff from, you know, snow melt. So it's pretty high quality, but a lot of our wells are getting pretty brackish. So we do have to keep those tested. We try to blend it with the snow melt water, you know, that we get from the district, from the canal.
Sure.
But the water testing is tested for E. coli is our main thing to make sure we have no coliform in our water.
Gotcha. Well, Steve, thank you so much. I really appreciate having you on the show today. Thanks for sharing all that information. I'm glad we got to hear that today, and good luck here the rest of this season. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contan's no-risk guarantee. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
BASF presents 5 things to do after harvest. Number 5, read all mail received since April. Number 4, put on your marketing hat. Number 3, clean 4 tons of dirt off your equipment. Number 2, clean 2 pounds of dirt off your boots. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're going to get to a number of the mailbag questions here in just a minute, but I first want to start off with John up in Michigan. John, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, and yourselves?
Good, good. So you made some changes this year on your planter setup, or you're talking about making some changes. What are you looking at, and what have you gotten done so far?
Well, we switched planters here a couple of years ago, and we've just been trying to get it dialed in ever since. So when we changed, we went from dry to liquid. We've had some issues with yield going backwards since. We're working on trying to work a little better with the soil sampling. We're going into smaller grids in order to get some more variable rate in to dial this in a little better. Just trying to keep moving forward with it that way.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. People that aren't on the farm, they don't realize how important that planter is and getting things started off well. If you can get a good, healthy crop early in the season, a lot of times that ends up being more yield for us as well. So
I always figure it's the most important pass you ever make in the field, no matter what you're doing.
Yep, I totally agree. You only get one shot to do that right. And, you know, we talk about soybean planting, too, that everybody seems to be in such – I shouldn't say everybody, but most people seem to be in such a rush. And maybe it's because that seems to be the crop that gets planted last after corn. But we're seeing it with the soybeans, too. Taking your time and getting them placed well is paying off this year for guys, too.
Yeah, we use a planter unit for planting beans. We've done that for, probably 10, 12 years now that we bought this planter. Worked with my uncle quite a bit in those days before he passed, and you don't need that. We've got a grain drill that does just a good enough job it is. And
yep.
The first day he combined, and we didn't have a yield monitor in anything, I got back that day talking to him that night. He looked at me and says, "I guess we'll never drill another bean on this farm." And so we've had very good luck with it. I think I get a lot better seed placement. We've cut the seeding rate back a little bit. With the drill back in those days, we were over 200,000. Today we've backed down to about 160, 165. And we're pushing, it varied quite a bit this year, but that had a lot to do with the yield, with the year we had. But the late stuff was high 30s on some of the light ground, some of the early stuff, and on some of the better ground, we were 66, 68 bushel on some of the beans. So we finally finished them up last Friday. So it's been a long, hard push this fall. So.
Oh, boy, yeah, this harvest has been something else. I hear you on making changes. That seems to be the toughest thing. A lot of people will talk about, you have such an advantage when you have a family member or two that was in farming to help you get started. But it's also tough to get some of those older guys to change their ways and try new things. So it sounds like you accomplished that.
Yeah, that was one thing that we had a little disagreement on that when the time came, and then turn around and the next thing was we were going to Louisville for the farm show one year. I was talking to him about some stuff, and he reached over on the desk and pulled a magazine up, and he had the page saved back, and he says, "I think you ought to look at some of this." And he had some technology stuff. I don't remember whose it was at that time, and he says, "We ought to look at some of that." I says, "It's funny you say that, because that's one of the things that was on my list, too." And we ended up buying a field computer that year to put in the tractor.
That is cool. Yeah, it's great.
It was easy to do, and sometimes you have some conflict, but that's all part of dealing with family and dealing with what you're doing moving forward with it. I've been very fortunate. My family is, we've been usually pretty forward, pretty upfront on trying to adapt new technologies with stuff. So some of that worked good. Sometimes it's still a little bit of a headache. So,
well, we're all people after all, and we have our own ideas, and sometimes we get stuck thinking we're right when we may not be. But no, that's really good. That's great encouragement, John, to share. We really appreciate hearing that, because so often we get worried about the one thing that we can't get along on and forget about the 10 things that we do get along pretty well on. So that's a good reminder for all of us.
Yeah, and I'm on the flip side of that today. I've got my kids that are talking about maybe they want to come back, maybe they don't. They're more into the livestock end of things. My one daughter's really, really in on the technology thing. She's looking at engineering stuff. And I'm the old generation on the farm now. So I got to remember some of that stuff moving forward to try and help bring the next generation in that wants to, if they want to come back.
Yeah, it's kind of scary how quickly we become the old generation on the farm, John.
It is.
That's cool, though. I mean, it's really cool. If you got family that wants to get back in, what an awesome opportunity.
Absolutely. So it's a great way to make a living and to raise a family and to live. It's not always easy. My family always pushed me to find something else to get a job off the farm. And I did spend a few years off the farm, worked as a mechanic for a couple local dealerships, worked for the government for a while. And when the opportunity came, I did come back home, and farm full time. And it's not always been easy, but it's nice to be flexible with, especially with the kids and that, you know, if we need to take a day here to go, if the kids got something going on, if they got doctor's appointments, if they've got school stuff, we can be flexible enough to do that. And you know, when you got the push in the spring and the fall, they understand it because you've been there. You know, I've been there for the 4-H fairs. I've been there with their FFA stuff. You know, they try and help when they can, and so it's a nice way to have a living and to raise a family.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate hearing from you today here, and good luck here going into the rest of the year.
Thank you. Yeah, we're hoping to finish up here. We got about a quarter of the corn left to finish up, and then hopefully we'll be done. We can get back in the shop and start looking at what other changes we're going to make on the planters, and maybe we're talking about maybe looking at going to a strip till machine to use that for some of the fertilizer placement and that kind of thing for next year. So lots of options and lots of research that we need to do to make sure we get the best things out there for it.
You bet. Well, thanks a lot, John. Really appreciate having you on.
Yep, thank you. You have a good day.
Bet, you too. Brian, we were talking about reduced tillage and seeing more insect pressure. And we had a question from a listener. He said, hey, you were talking about reduced tillage and that contributing to increased insect pressure, but you didn't mention why that happens. I'm wondering, why do you see more bugs when you reduce tillage?
Well, tillage kills a number of bugs to begin with. Either it is going to cut them up or it's going to bury them so deep that they can't recover from that. So that's probably the number one reason.
Yeah, you think about it going into winter, a lot of those bugs that are going to overwinter in our soil or in crop residue, when you disturb mm-hmm. their home in right. the middle of the winter, they don't really have a chance to find a new home.
Now, when you say that, so a lot of the no-tillers, that's what they talk about, disturbing the homes of the beneficial bacteria and fungi and earthworms in that soil as well. So what do they always talk about? They say, hey, if you leave the ground untilled, you're going to have a better home for them. Yep, you are, but you're also, unfortunately, going to have a better home for some of the harmful insects, too.
Thanks for that question. Really appreciate it. Got one from Charlie here. He said, I'm wondering, you talk about Neil Kinsey on the show. Do you follow Neil Kinsey's fertility programs and recommendations?
Mostly, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, I can't think of anything that we're totally going contrary to, and a lot of those same principles that Neil Kinsey talks about that Dr. Albrecht developed and promoted in his day, the same things that Neil's talking about, and a lot of those things with base saturation percentages and that are things that we look at too.
About the only thing I would say is we're probably a lot more aggressive than what Neil will talk about. He talks about kind of taking it a step at a time and everything. Well, I'm super impatient, so I'll
really?
Usually pour the coals to it. I'll say, okay, well, if we need to get to X level over a period of time, why don't I just get there today? And so that's probably about the only real big thing I'd say.
Well, thanks for the question, Charlie. Yeah, we appreciate it. And we love having Neil on when we get a chance to visit with him. I think it's information that is valuable for everyone. Had a fun show today. I always like talking to farmers around the country, still thinking about the guys down in North Carolina and some of the tough areas this year and the guys trying to get harvest done. If you're one of those, just know you're in our prayers and we're thinking about you daily. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.